Like, I've seen my wife cry a lot about all kinds of nonsense. She's gonna beat me up when I cry. But this was the kind of cry complete brokenness in our face, man, in our eyes. Like, I never want to see anything like that again. That's the most terrifying thing I've seen. Like, the most heart-wrenching thing I've seen. So look in her eyes and see that. Just, she was just destroyed.
Oh, you've got me. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Still Parents podcast, supported by Global's Make Some Noise. On this episode, we are joined by our guest, Mark Beaumont. We are going to speak to Mark and hear his story in just a few moments from now. But in the meantime, thank you very much if you are watching live or if you're listening back to this through your podcast provider, whenever the trough that is. You can find our website, stillparentspodcast.co.uk, Still Parents Podcast, on our socials. Hi, Ryan, you okay?
You got me mid burp.
Yeah. Oh, you done that before.
Cheers, Dan. Thanks for that. Yeah, I'm good, thanks. I'm hot because it's actually quite warm today, isn't it?
It is very warm. Ryan from the Lily May Foundation, who set this up along with Matt Whitehouse. Hello, Matt.
Hello, mate.
Just during lockdown, when we decided during that lockdown weirdness, which we all went through, we're going to do a few episodes talking about this shitstorm, which is baby loss, and also trying to encourage guys to talk. As we always say, we do talk, but we talk a lot of bollocks. However, what we found during those is that there are opportunities to progress a conversation, and sometimes you need to, it works for me, you need to have that sort of chit-chat, don't you, and a bit of rubbish to then be able to get into the things that really matter. So with that in mind, if you'd like to ask any questions to either Ryan or to Matt or our guest Mark on this episode, if you're watching live or if you're listening back, whenever that is, you can still get in touch with the show website and we can answer those at a future date. Let's introduce our guest on this episode of the Still Parents podcast. His name is Mark Beaumont. Mark, thank you very much for joining us in the studio.
Thank you, guys.
Especially because you've just, I didn't even know this till you turned up, you've just driven 2.5 hours to get here from London.
That's right, yeah. Just near Heathrow.
Did Matt tell you you could have joined on Zoom? I mean, I love the fact you're here. We'd prefer to have you here, but that is brilliant. Thank you very much.
Dedication.
Absolutely right.
It is. How did you, out of interest, hear about the podcast or end up with you coming on? Was it you yourself? Was it a partner or a family member?
Yeah, so no, it was my wife, Selena, who... she just told me about you guys and that you do a podcast focused on baby loss. Hmm. And because she knows I like to watch a lot of podcasts and I talk a lot. So she's like, yeah, do you want to do that? I said, yeah, I definitely would love to do that. So, here we are.
Absolutely fantastic. Well, thank you so much. And cheers, Selena, for getting in touch. What do you do for a living?
I work in finance. I'm an accountant.
Proper job.
Yeah, proper job. Proper job. Yeah. White collar.
How old are you?
I'm turning 31 in August, so yeah.
Oh, okay.
30, but I feel about 45 at times.
My next question was, how are you feeling? Do you remember turning... When I turned 30, that was around the time I was... That's when you start hearing, oh, you're getting old now.
I can't even think what year I would have turned 30.
Yeah. We're all considerably older than you in the studio. So
you're only as young as you feel, you know. You're in decent shape for, you know, your ages.
Thank you.
Have to, honestly, yeah.
You can come again.
You're absolutely right, yeah. I like that one. That's good. Yeah.
Mark, thank you so much for coming in, especially for driving 2.5 hours. Considering that the reason why you're here is, you know, we're not here to really, you know, laugh and joke around, although we do a little bit. The reason that you are here is to talk about one of the worst things that's ever happened in your life with you and Selena, and that was the loss of your baby, which I believe is just coming up to a year.
Yeah, so it was like towards the end of August.
August 2023.
That's right.
What we do with every episode, I'm not sure how much you've heard of the podcast before, but we would like you, in as much detail that you would like, to share your story that you and Selena went through with the loss of your child. Ryan and Matt will come in with any questions alongside anyone watching live who would like to. If you would like to ask Mark something, please do. Ryan is looking at the comments and talk us through your situation, which happened in August 2023 with you and your wife, Selena.
Yeah, sure. So we were expecting our second son. Aiden, his name is. He was supposed to be, so he was due in September, and we lost him towards the end of August. My wife, Selena, was low risk the whole time. Mm. She was low risk for the her previous pregnancy as well with our son, Elijah. And yeah, the loss was a complete shock to us all. It was a random occurrence with not much of an explanation in terms of the hospital's part.
Right, okay.
Yeah, it was actually a couple of days after my 30th birthday as well.
Oh.
Yeah, it was a really bad time because it was like a, you know, they say sort of things come in threes.
Yeah.
I lost my granddad on the 17th. I turned 30 on the 21st. And then we lost the baby. We found out we lost the baby on the, like, the 23rd or 24th, something like that. So, yeah.
Wow.
I feel like celebrating birthdays is never really going to be the same for me.
So within the space of a week.
Yeah, crazy week.
Literally a week, right?
Yep.
That seems to, as you said, with the things always seem to happen in a, because that's, a few of our guests have come on and the losses have been quite recently after other grief events. Traumas.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
It's just what life does.
It's like nothing happens and then everything happens at once. Yeah, it's crazy. But yeah, and like since the loss, it's been a real battle. So, well, you never get over it, but getting through it. And yeah, so many hurdles and challenges and stuff. You know, I could go on and on. I don't know where to begin, sort of thing.
Well, I mean, I'll bring in Ryan and Matt straight away because in that time leading up to your... Can you remember where you were at this particular moment just a couple of months before the first... We've done a whole episode on this, but that time leading up to the first anniversary...
Well, I don't think I'd have come on a podcast, I'll be honest. So well done. Honestly, like, I don't think I'd have been in the right headspace, in my opinion, to not even a year in. So I think it's... Yeah. You know, I'm not saying that patronising anyway. I think it's amazing.
Do you know what though? And I think that's really good to be that honest as well. Because even in the 7 years, 8 years, so much has changed. Excuse me.
Edit.
So much has changed in the regard of men talking and expressing emotion or talking about what is the worst day of their life. Even in that 8 years, and I mean, you know, we're going back, 14 years, and coming up to a year, where was I? I was teaching.
Yeah.
I was a completely different person to what I am now in regard to just the person I was. Just, I can't even really explain it, to be honest, because... Actually, at a year, I had a complete and utter breakdown.
Yeah.
Which completely changed me because I hadn't dealt with anything. And like you say, the strategies and stuff like that.
That's the reason why
I was constantly using distractions. And we talk about distractions an awful lot, don't we? So I was constantly using distractions to get through everyday life. So that's where I was. Would I have come onto a podcast? I probably would have, because I think at that point I was in a bit of denial as well.
I was just about to mention that.
Hadn't probably processed everything properly. So I think for me, I probably would have. But again, like I say, like what Matt said there, I do often wonder, like we have a lot of people who come on very, very soon after they've lost their baby, don't we? Mm-hmm. And it's a shame we can't go back to see whether that would have happened 10, 15 years ago and something in comparison to now.
When we lost Callie was, I've always talked about Callie, but to start with, I wrote about Callie. So it was a lot of on social media, things like this. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I talked about it, but like even Ryan said, since 8 years has passed, there's been a lot of change. Like obviously, there was nothing like this or anything kind of podcast, nothing like that. So yeah, I'm interested to see what your journey's been like so far. And
I mean, initially when we found out, so how we found out was Selena was I was actually sick at the time. I was down with like flu, so I was like in bed the whole day and stuff,
just after your birthday.
And yeah, she went out to the shopping center with Elijah. Elijah's 2 years old at the time, so he's doing stuff 2 year olds do, you know. And yeah, she called me on the phone and said, I've not felt the baby move. And I just reassured her. I was like, well, you know, it happens, maybe sleeping. This happened with Elijah and obviously he's fine. Like, don't worry about it. It's fine. Just reassuring her as I would. And then, a few hours went by and I got a a call from a random number. So I answered it. And it was a hospital. And they're telling me to come. So, yeah. I jumped out of bed, got a cab to the hospital. Selena had the car. So, yeah, I got a cab to the hospital. And during this time, I still didn't think it could be the worst. I still didn't think they were going to tell us, like, oh, we lost the baby. I thought, oh, snap, okay. Is she going to have to deliver now? Or maybe it's just something and then they need to monitor her and then...
Yeah.
Where were you week-wise at this point as far as the pregnancy was concerned?
It was 4 weeks.
4 weeks.
4 weeks before the due date.
So around 36, something like that.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, around
whatever
that,
it adds up to. So yeah, very late. I mean, like he could have been born fine.
Yeah,
I think in the last 4 weeks, all they do is like fatten up.
Hence the reason what you might be thinking, okay, this could be delivery time.
Exactly.
That might be why they're phoning you.
Exactly. Yeah. I remember at the time I was thinking, oh my gosh, I'm about to take home another boy now. he's here early. I was just thinking like I'm going to have him and just be looking at him saying, oh, you're early. I wasn't expecting you yet.
Did you know you were having a boy?
Yeah. I was absolutely thrilled.
Yeah.
Absolutely thrilled because like with Elijah, when I found out he was a boy, Selena will tell you this, we've actually got footage. I came out of that clinic and I gave the most primal roar of joy.
Proper, yeah.
Yeah, man. I was like, it's a boy. Like, because I don't have no brothers. I don't have many men in my family.
Yeah.
And I just really wanted to sort of, you know, start my, you know, my
your pack.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, finding out we're having a second one, I was like, yes. I was like, you know, I've got double what I wanted, you know. Got two boys coming. So yeah, I got to the hospital. I walked into the room. I see Selena sitting there on the bed with the nurse next to her, or the midwife. Selena's in tears. And then it still didn't like register to me. It still didn't entertain the thought that, okay, I thought, you know, maybe they're just going to tell me something, you know, that's not the worst. And then as soon as she said like, oh yeah, we've done some scans, there's no heartbeat. I burst out into tears. I was just screaming like, no. Like I wanted to just jump out the window, man. I just thought like, how, why? Mm. Why, how? Like she was low risk the whole time, you know?
And up until that point, there'd been everything had been absolutely routine.
The checks, he was fine. He was measured and things, right size. And you know, she was fine. There was really no reason. I just couldn't understand.
Yeah.
I just couldn't understand it. I couldn't believe it. It's like, I feel like I was dreaming or something. Like I said, I was sick and I was like taking meds and stuff. I thought, no, this must be some crazy, you know,
hallucination,
medicine, dream sort of thing. But no, it's real, man. And that's when it's like, nothing's been the same since then. Nothing.
Right.
Like life, I look at life differently since then. I've not felt the same. I don't think the same about anything really. You know, those first, like, I'll probably say the first half an hour was just real confusion and, you know, oh my gosh, and sadness and tears and crying. But then I automatically went on kind of like, okay, I got to sort this out. I've got to patch this up. I've got to take care of Selena. Because after I sort of, you know, let's say came to terms with what happened in the initial like half an hour, my biggest worry was, okay, how on earth is Selena going to get through this? Mm. I thought, that's it.
Do you want to fix it? Was it the guy thing?
Yeah. I thought, look, she's probably gonna, you know, lose her mind and, you know, how can I put this politically correct? Like, you know, probably have to get some sort of professional kind of help for a long time. Because I thought there's no way she can get through this. Because like since we met, we've just been obsessed with starting a family. It's all we've ever wanted to do.
Oh, okay.
And we've put everything, blood, sweat, and tears into it. We moved away from our family to sort of get more affordable accommodation away from London to have that family home and things, which we did. You know, Elijah was born absolutely perfectly. And we just thought, this can't be real.
And like the mental process behind it as well, because we've had guests on and it's been the other way around. The first child was the child that they lost. And then the second pregnancy was completely different because it was laced with that whole, is this going to happen again? You and Selena with Elijah didn't have that. So maybe subconsciously that mentally, but there was no reason to expect any of this.
No. I mean, you know these things happen, you know it's a possibility, but you like we didn't entertain that thought. We thought we just didn't entertain that thought. It's like,
but why would you? You wouldn't.
Yeah,
would you?
exactly. You know, like.
But also, as humans, we are very much it's not going to happen to me as well, don't we?
Yeah, yeah.
And that would have just been through the subconscious anyway. It wouldn't have been. It's not like you would have stood there yourself and said, oh, this isn't going to happen to me sort of thing. It's like you say, you wouldn't entertain it because it doesn't even come into your thought process that it is going to actually happen to you.
Yeah, all we're thinking about is preparing for, you know, next little terror to come and destroy our house. And, you know. And so she was in the hospital for about, I think, 3-4 days.
Okay.
And like as soon as we'd kind of like been able to sat there and process it for a couple of hours, say, we had to go. We then had to go through the sort of formalities and the procedures of what comes next, and that's what really just like tore my heart to pieces. Ooh,
yeah,
like just seeing that. Like I've seen my wife cry a lot about all kinds of nonsense. She's gonna beat me up when I cry. But this was the kind of cry that just complete brokenness in our face, man, in our eyes. Like I never want to see anything like that again. That's the most terrifying thing I've seen, like the most heart-wrenching thing I've seen. So look in her eyes and see that. Just she was just destroyed.
Hmm. Oh, you've got me.
Nah, yeah, proper.
Because you've took me back.
Yeah, me as well.
To being in that room.
Yeah.
And I couldn't do nothing about it. I can't do nothing about it. She's absolutely in pieces, and I can't do anything about it. And she's still got this kid inside her. And shortly after that, yeah, we're baffled. We don't know about this in detail. We don't know what comes next. But it's like, look, he's fully formed, pretty much. She's got to deliver him as if he's alive. And that's when I really started thinking about life. Like, yo, no, I'm sorry. This, no one should have to go through this. I wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy. Stop me if I'm being too like graphic or detailed. But I think I feel like it's a real it's a real horror story. Like I appreciate the, you know, we're all kind of lighthearted and stuff, but this this is an absolute horror story.
That's why we're here,
absolutely.
For that. So like obviously she has to take this pill, which, you know, takes a while to settle in, and then it makes her contract, and then it makes the baby ready to come out. So yeah, that took like the better part of a day or something to sort of kick in, I think. And then I just remember it was like evening time by this time. And then it's, you know, the room's kind of dark. They had this, one of those, I don't know if you know these like sort of like rock type lamps. Right? It's like kind of crystal looking rock lamp thing. Yeah. It was like orange, right? So it's like kind of illuminating the room a little bit in that kind of somber kind of color. Yeah. And it's like real quiet. And it's like when a baby's being delivered and stuff, like I compare it to how when Elijah came out, the room, it was daytime. The room was bright. We're all, you know, anticipation, there's movement, and there's, you know, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But this time it's like, you've got to go through that again.
Yeah.
She's going to go through those, you know, delivery pains, but there's not any prize at the end. And you're not going to, you're not waiting for those cries. You're not waiting for those, you know, those screeches and cries from when the baby comes out, because you know that's not going to be there. But there's a bit of hope in you that is just thinking, what if
do you think at some point do you I asked this, did you believe it? Obviously it's there, but there's the denial and so raw,
like miracles, like we're Christians, right? And you know, we still sort of believed in a miracle in a way, but obviously our kind of logical mind is telling us, well, no, you're not felt him move in 2 days, so and they're telling us there's no heartbeat, so yeah, she still had to deliver him as if he's alive. And none of us looked, obviously. I didn't want to see. So the decision we made was not to see him or hold him. Now, that sat wrong with a lot of people. Everybody has their different kind of opinions about that, but it's like we both agreed not to do that, because had we done so, it would have been extremely hard to get over. And I'm glad we chose not to see him or hold him or anything till now, because all I have of him now is an imagination.
If I
had those actual images of his face and his hair and his fingers or something, like, you know, and what he felt like and stuff, I could never get over that.
Yeah.
So I'm supposed to hold him now and then just give him away and then go home. We couldn't. If we had we done that, we would never get over it.
You and Selena, you do what you needed to do. And I know people listening to this, some will be one way, some will be the other. But we'll come back to that. That was what you guys needed to do as a couple to manage the best, to have some control over the uncontrollable.
Exactly. Because as I said, I pretty much automatically went into survival mode. I was like, all right, especially since we've got a son, we've got a kid already. The show must go on, you know. We've got to get back to normal. I'm not having him affected by any of this or traumatized by any of this or having any of this like lasting, you know, sort of affecting him. So I automatically went on survival mode and I was like, all right, we've got to get through this. We've got to get back to normal.
What did survival mode look like for you as Mark Beaumont? How, you know, for people listening who experienced their own versions of it?
I was just thinking about my wife. I was just, because I thought, look, she's probably going to go into like depression. Like long-term sort of depression and stuff. I mean, and that would just be extremely difficult. Like we've got a child, a young child already. I just had to just dig deep and do whatever I can to make this as painless as possible and as easy to move forward from as possible. We had, you know, family came down. Like I really, you know, her dad, I hold him in high regard because he lived. So we're in Wolverhampton at the time. That's where the hospital was. And her dad lived in Manchester. And he got down there in what felt like half an hour. He came straight away. I'm thankful to him that he was there. So she had both of us in the room with her when she delivered. But yeah, like I said, I went to survival mode. I just was there for her. I was, you know, telling her like, you know, Bible scripture and just really reassuring her, telling her, you know, these things happen. It's not our fault. It's not your fault. He's gone straight to heaven. You don't have to pass through this cruel world. You know, he lived and died inside his mom who loved him. And, you know, his experience with us isn't going to be the way Elijah's experience with us is going to be, you know. He's perfect. He'll never have to come home late or get drunk and throw up on the floor or break mommy's vases. He's perfect. He's always going to be our favorite child. I don't care.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No.
You know?
You know, I have to say, right, it's such an interesting and I'm going to say, refreshingly honest way of putting all of this tonight and how you've done it, because, you know, not that anyone has ever held back on this show, because I don't think you can. I think once you get into this kind of story, I think you have to just go for it and tell your version, right?
Yeah.
But I think how honest you've been and what you've said is just, I think it's, yeah. But I also have to say as well that what you said as far as your day was concerned, I wanted to say this a bit earlier, that's baby loss right there.
Which bit?
The fact that you start your day and you were sick in bed and she went shopping. Mm-hmm. And then by the end of the day or the next day, it's completely different. And I've always said one of the scariest parts and hardest parts of baby loss is the speed of everything.
And
that's what happened with us, with Callie, was the speed of it. 8 o'clock, she was fine, kicking around inside a crystal. 9:29, she passed away. Hour and a half, right? But that's the thing. It's the life. So when you say survival mode, I think there probably isn't, at that point, there's no other way of dealing with it. Because you do have to survive. It's a game of survival, isn't it? It really is. Mm-hmm. It really is a game
instinctual,
of survival.
Isn't it?
Absolutely.
And the thing is, it's like, that's a real call to dads. I feel like, I know my role in that whole thing was, you know, like extremely important. It's unmatched. The role of a dad in that circumstance is like so important, because you and your wife are the only people going through that at that time. It's your child. That's just, that you've just lost. You've got to share that load. I mean, it's like, previous to that happening, if I was to think about that, or like if like a friend of mine was going through it, part of me would just kind of be like, okay, it happens. You can just have another one. Which some people had said to me, and I'm not angry at them for that, because it's like, you're right. Yeah. But it's, you know, there's a lot of considerations to make. Like,
can I ask you to elaborate on that? Because it's something that these guys, we've heard that a lot, and it's such a, it doesn't maybe necessarily come from a bad place, but it's quite a flippant nature about just think before you speak, isn't it? The exact phrase that you said, you can have another one.
Yeah, yeah. Which that's correct. Yes, we can. And yes, it does happen, you know. Like I said, it's just a flippant kind of... It's like commenting on something that you haven't been through, so you don't know how it feels. You're just observing what's happened and you're just stating facts. It happens and you can have another one. But yeah, those situations require a greater deal of sensitivity. So anyone that does know someone that's happened to recently or at any point, like, it's a real sensitive subject. If you haven't been through it, count yourself very blessed. And I hope you never go through it. I genuinely do. Every part of it, like, there's so much pain in the whole thing. But the only part of it that almost brings me to tears, I can remember what her face looked like. I remember just looking at her face, just distraught. And like I said, I've seen her cry many times. This one was just like I don't even have the I don't even have the words to describe it, man. It's like I'm looking at just pure sadness and...
It's broken, right? Broken.
Yeah, brokenness in her face, man. And as a husband or a partner, like, you got work to do, man. Like, be there for your woman, man.
If what you said there about taking care of your woman, right? You just do the best you can, don't you? Because I didn't know what to do. I don't know what you thought, but I had no clue what to say, how to do it. Yeah. Because I've never been in this situation before. Normally, if, for example, if you've pissed your wife off, you can probably think back to what you've done before.
I'm an expert. Right.
but between the four of us, how many times have we pissed our wives off just this week in this room?
Well, mine's not even in the country, and
you pissed her off
a couple of times.
Good luck.
I actually don't mind me saying, the other week I went down and I said, morning, do you want, what's wrong with you? I said, I've only said morning.
Well, I got in trouble the other morning because I've got dream mat, and Crystal was pissed off with me because she dreamt about the fact that I'd done something in the sleep, and she's fucking pissed off at me because I'd woken up and I'd done something in the dream. Yeah. Like, anyway.
But I love that.
But what I'm getting around to is the fact that in general, you can go back in your mind and think, right, we've had similar circumstances to this. I can figure things out here and we can get back. But I don't know about you, but I didn't think that we'd ever get back on track again.
Right, exactly. Those are the exact thoughts that were going through my head. I thought everything's going to be different now.
How do we get back?
This is kind of it. Like, I definitely just thought, oh, this is going to be the end of her, man. How's she going to get through this? Right. Like, I thought she'd end up having to be institutionalized and stuff.
Right.
Oh, wow. It's because of, like, our situation, like, our upbringings, our sort of family background and whatnot. And like I said, we were obsessed with, like, having kids since we got together. We've been together, like, for like 11 years now, right? She was 17, I was 19 at the time we got together. So we spent our whole 20s together.
And that's beautiful. The fact that, young and you still,
And, yeah, we just always had sort of, you know, our dream of, like, we wanted five kids. That's why when you told me you had five, I was like, wow. Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, we still do, I guess, but and it was everything. We put our blood, sweat, and tears into it. We sort of circled our universe around, you know, this family we're about to create, and we just got hit with a real punch to the gut. We done everything right, and there's a lot of frustrations as well. And it's like, not to, like, offend people or bash anybody, but it's like, look, we work hard, we're married to each other. We're doing everything we can to create the perfect environment to raise kids in. Nothing, I don't want to say perfect, I shouldn't say perfect, but we're doing everything we can to make the best environment to raise kids in. Why is this happening to us? When you've got people out there, you know.
Absolutely right.
Neglecting kids and, you know,
right.
Whatnot.
Yeah,
and having kids by mistake and, like, just stuff like that. And like I said, I don't mean to bash anybody or what, but it's like, look, we've been putting work into this.
Yeah.
I was exactly the same because I was a teacher at the time.
Right.
So I was a PE teacher. I was six months into what was my newly qualified teacher year. And I worked in a pretty tough school. Okay. And not wanting to sort of characterise, it was in the middle of three council estates that were in an area of Birmingham that was renowned for high teenage pregnancy rates, domestic abuse, lots of safeguarding issues and things like that. And my love for teaching and any form of child at that point that couldn't be asked in a lesson or was rude to a member of staff or was rude to each other, I had absolutely no time for, because I just thought, you've just got no idea. You've got an opportunity in your life to be able to do something.
Yeah.
You know, nobody's saying you've got to be a brain surgeon, but just make best of what you're able to do. Get a job, get a family, blah, 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 blah. And I went down that path. Because that was my way that I could control that.
Sure.
I could have the control over that, and I could say, oh, little Johnny over there is pissing me off today, so I don't have to speak to him today, or I don't have to deal with that behaviour today.
Little Johnny. Wasn't he Robin Hood?
Little John.
All right, little Daniel over there. Yeah. I just sort of thought, I don't have to.
Yeah, and
I think, like what Mark said there, I don't think it's not bashing people. It's being realistic.
Yeah.
Because there are people where you go to a maternity unit and they're stood outside having a cigarette and they're about to give birth. Yeah. Or
they just don't want the child.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
We wanted this child with everything.
Yeah. I think from the time that we've spent so far and the way that you've spoken, as what you said, without wanting to, you're very wary of other people's emotions, despite the fact that you and Selena have been through this absolute, going through, I should say, this absolute shitstorm. Mm-hmm. You've mentioned, I hope you don't mind me asking, because about the wanting to have five children and the role of that religion plays in your life.
Sure.
And it's the way you feel, I don't want to get, just to put it out there, Matt's religious family.
Sure.
Ryan, atheist. So that, with that, and I just and it dawned on me when you said it, because it almost feels, it's just so with that, with your belief, there you go, what this is what we want, five, we have this faith for you, and what you get is, okay, you're not having this child,
right? Yeah,
I could have worded that better, I'm sorry. Yeah, no, but no, you know, I mean, how does that, no, where you at?
I see where you're going with that, like I mean, but it's, look, I feel like, say religion, I'd see it more as just faith, like it's faith, and like there's many interpretations of it and things, especially with Christianity and whatnot. It's not a one size fits all.
Absolutely.
And there's like how many denominations and whatnot and different types of beliefs and whatnot, but like the Bible says what it says as far as I'm concerned, and like the way I see it, a stillborn child is sinless, so there's only one place they're going.
Yeah.
I feel like that was the pivotal talk I had with Selena.
Okay, yeah.
Which from then, things slowly started going up.
Okay, yeah.
And so that faith backing is what got us through, I think. And I just thank God that those words came to me to say that to her, because I really didn't know the words to say. But those words came
you
to me.
You had some to get in, absolutely.
Yeah.
But you know what? And like that to me is... how do I explain this? I've never really been religious. Mm-hmm. One thing I do like is I really like religious artwork.
Sure.
Which is, obviously you can see my tattoos. Right, I'm very much, I love religious artwork. I just think it's really, I just like it. And maybe if somebody had said something different to me when we lost Lily, I wouldn't have the stance that I have now, because the first person that I spoke to that was that was involved in any sort of religious background or anything like that, they work at the church where we got married, where our children have been christened, where we had Lily's funeral, and the first thing that somebody said to me was, "God does things for a reason and to test you," and that was all she said. And at that point, I thought, fuck you, sort of thing. Because I thought to myself, if that's the case...
You don't really want to hear that.
Then what a bastard. That's all I was thinking.
Yeah.
You know, because why would you do something so heart-wrenching to somebody to test them?
Sure.
You know, like, I don't know, throw me a curveball where, I don't know, I drop my fish and chips on the floor when I come out the chip shop. Doing something to test me or something like that. That's a stupid thing.
This is beyond the test.
And who was that person? Were they like one of the...
It was somebody within the church.
Just a person, or was it like a minister or something? Or?
No, it was actually a parent of a friend who I've known for years.
I see.
I think you might find Kelly Jean-Philippe's episode is quite interesting. This is Chaplin over in Philadelphia. We've had him on a few times, and sure. And some of the conversations we've had with him about that. I think it doesn't matter where your stance is on religion, what you said was amazing, because because the innocence at birth is, no one's born with hatred in their heart. No one's born with a sin, with done anything wrong. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really, really well said point.
Like Aiden, having lost him, without him coming into the world yet, he's perfect. He's forever perfect. Yeah. He's our diamond. Right. He's untouchable.
Right.
And like you said earlier on, he doesn't have to go through
exactly.
what we go through on a daily basis, does he?
Exactly, he never will. Like Elijah, who's three, he's our golden child.
Yeah.
He's a golden boy.
Yeah.
Gold can be, you know, it can be tarnished. It can be beaten about and stuff. But it's still gold. He's still my golden boy. But Elijah's diamond.
I love your mindset, man.
In this sort of game, in this sort of, when stuff like this happens, you got to be strong. Because look, your woman can lose the child and she's going to be sad. So she's got to find strength from somewhere. It's a no-brainer to me.
On that then, have you had your moments?
Absolutely. Right. I'm still having them.
You still have, like...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, like I said, I say this all the time. I don't at the moment, but I run 20 miles a week to balance me out.
There you go. That's good. That's productive.
That's my balance.
I've had anger outbursts.
Right.
I've had, you know, drink is cheap.
That's the only reason.
There's a lot of measures it's taken to sort of just even get through a day.
Mm. Yeah. Okay.
But I just feel like you got to be mentally strong. You got to still have hope for the future, even though you've lost. And that's another part of it. It's like, look, I've lost part of my future. That's another really hard part of it. It's
an amazing line.
I've lost part of the future. It's not just the past, which is tough to think about. It's the future now. Yeah. Like I think of him now. I think of when I see anyone on the commute to work or whatever, or anywhere with a baby that's around, you know, 8-9 months old. I'm thinking, gosh, Aiden would be that age now, just sitting up, like, you know. Or
Does it feel like you notice that all the time? Because
all the time. And what was especially hard at the start was like, When I'd see a set of brothers around that age gap, whatever age they might be, whether it's like 5 and 7 or, you know, 2 and newborn or like even like, I don't know, 20 and 18.
Yeah.
I think of Elijah and I feel like he ain't got his little bro. He ain't got his little best friend. Like them two not being able to have that brotherhood and dynamic, that really hurt me for a while. And it's to the point like we were on holiday. We were in Egypt shortly after that. Went on holiday to try and sort of, you know, get through things. We were in Egypt in September. October or something. And there were families out there. It was a family resort sort of thing. And then these two little boys, they're probably like 5 and 7. They walk around the corner, like kicking their football. And I just burst into tears, man. I just burst into tears because she knew exactly why.
Yeah.
It's like, I just wanted to see them two brothers just like beating each other up and doing stupidness brothers do, man. Because I never had no brother and I wish I always did. And I was like, I can give that to Elijah.
Yeah.
You know? And he would have been a fantastic older brother, man. Like I said, he thinks he's the man of the house. but yeah, we won't have that now. Like, yes, we might have more kids, but it's like that close age brotherly bond we'll never have. And that's, you know, that's very sad. It's very sad to me for me to think about.
Ryan said, you said it many times, didn't you, Ryan? You said it's a life of lost moments, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's a lifetime of lost opportunities and lost moments.
I mean, that's how I explain it to people about baby loss who don't understand it. Is you build a lifetime of memories with a grandparent, with a parent, with a brother, with a sister. Whereas this, you don't get the opportunity, and it is a lifetime of missed opportunity, of a lifetime of missed moments, memories, whatever that may be. I had that with Alfie, even though Lily obviously was a girl but we'd got Alfie. I remember the first Christmas after we lost Lily, just sitting there watching Alfie, just thinking, we failed this kid. Mm. And even though I knew deep down we hadn't failed him, my heart just absolutely broke for him because he didn't have that sibling that he was supposed to have. Mm-hmm. I had a moment today watching my daughter in a dance show, thinking, I mean, like, Ivy's 9, nearly 10. And it just went through my mind, bloody, I wonder if Lily would have done dancing or if she'd have been a, you know, or if she'd have liked football or if she'd have done something, who knows, something completely different. But it still goes through your mind. It's just the what ifs all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which are, you can't answer them. You'll never be able to answer. They're impossible to answer. But it would be unhealthy if you didn't have those moments, because you're always going to reflect on whether they would, you know, in your case, Aidan, would, whether he would have been the same in terms of mentality, personality as Elijah, or, you know, and I look at things like that, and it's just, I have to remind myself very, very quickly that, and it's not a remind myself to get myself out of the situation. It's just remind myself very quickly that I'm very fortunate with what I've got as well. And that's why when I have heard people in the past say, oh, it's okay, you can have another one, or it's okay, not everybody is fortunate enough to go on and do that. And that's why comments like that anger me.
I look at it like that. So we've gone on to have Etta. So Etta's now 7 in October. Right. We've only had another one since we had Callie. Mm-hmm. But I look at it like this, that the one time it really hit me was when Etta had her first day in reception and then her first reception sports day. Because I thought, I should have already done that. And then a lot of the time when Etta walks into school, I'm like, I should be dropping her off, but also I should have dropped Callie around the corner to right, whatever. But then I look at it and think, well, actually, if would Etta be here now, would we have had that plan to go on? So, and what you said about that, what you said about, and it's not Etta's fault, you know. I can't, Etta's
maybe you're right, because you don't know that might that
no, but
whole, yeah, sliding doors, isn't it?
And my dad has always said that she's got two controlling her anyway, because she says that like Callie's in. Her personality at times is, there's definitely two there. But what you said about losing, when that comment comes out about you can go and have another one, as you said, fine, but I don't want another one. I want that one.
Yeah.
Right. And when I had that comment, like it, I'll always want Callie. I'll always want her, and I'll always, and again, like little things like if Etta ever gets married, would I have walked Callie down the aisle?
So that was a massive one for me. Right. That was.
You know, so if I walk Etta down the aisle, what kind of day would, and I can't think that far ahead because you never know, but that day, I'm sure that day, if it ever comes, I'll be walking down that aisle thinking there'll be that teen, and I say it all the time.
Well, you're already thinking about it.
It's that missing, it's that missing jigsaw piece all the time. There's always that, as happy as I'll ever be, I'll never be 100% happy, because there's always something that little bit missing all the time.
Yeah.
But you can't, unfortunately, you can't sit there most of the time, because life doesn't, and it's unhealthy to sit in that moment. That's why you do have to change the narrative. And as Ryan said, you look at what you've got in front of you, but it's very difficult.
It's difficult.
Wasn't part of it recognising, like you said, sitting in that moment and with the benefits of the 14 years, it'll be eight years. To know, coming back to what we mentioned at the start. So it's because you don't want to not have those moments, because it means you won't be thinking about your. That's where part of the elephant in the room territory lies for people such as myself, speaking to friends who've gone through a loss when you don't have that experience yourself.
But it's interesting about what Mark said about you decided not to meet Aidan, right? Mm. We had 2.5 days with Callie in the hospital. Mm. Did it help? I don't know. That was just our choice.
Sure.
And everyone is different in that moment. But I just thought it was a fascinating thing that you said about we need to get moving again. This is the way we're going to do it.
Yep.
No, my biggest fear was forgetting her.
Right.
That was literally mine. Was forgetting her. Forgetting what she looked like. Forgetting what she smelled like.
Right.
Forgetting just like even looking at like your sort of, you know, hands, toes, things like that. Just forgetting that. And
you also said you didn't want to start with, you were almost worried about holding her, right?
I didn't want to hold her.
Yeah.
I didn't want to hold her. It was my mum and my mother-in-law that gave her to me.
Right, okay.
Because, I didn't want to break her. That was my thing. I just didn't want to break her.
Yeah.
I was scared of forgetting of things. And listen, there's still things now that aren't as vivid as they were, obviously. That's probably to do with age. But there were definitely things that I can remember just like they were yesterday, yesterday. But then there's other things that I've forgotten as well. It's such a shit journey.
So how does it look for you now? I know it's a big question, right?
But well, I mean, I feel like losing the baby, it inflated a lot of other challenges. I mean, look, It's 2024. I live in London. Houses are way too fucking expensive.
Yeah. Like, I think we can all say, yep.
So, yeah. And look, I said I wasn't going to swear, but I had to.
Let it out.
Yeah. And yeah, we're hard workers, taxpayers and whatnot. And it's the sort of thing where we already feel like, okay, it's not the 90s or 80s. We're working twice as hard and we're getting half as much. Because it's like, look, you can't get a 3-bedroom semi-detached in London for 100K like my parents did back in 98. Now that's half a mil, right? And they paid for that house double what their combined salary was. For me and my missus to buy that at the same sort of equitable point, we'd have to be on 125K each.
Wow.
Makes no sense.
Yeah. No, it's ridiculous.
And we're graduates. My parents had regular jobs. So there's stuff like that. It's like, you know, that feeling of I work so hard. Give me my fruit.
You know, I paid my dues.
Exactly. And having a baby all the way to the end and losing it symbolizes that as well.
Okay.
So much frustration, man. And so much feeling of what's the point? And like, why would we want to go through this again? Why would we want to try again? And I think it's like hot and cold. Mm-hmm. It's hot and cold with, you know, wanting to try again and things. And then sometimes we're just like, oh, you know, should we just, I mean, we've got Elijah, you know, let's just count our blessings, take our ball and go home.
But that can change on any given day, doesn't
it? It can,
just
that's what I'm saying.
On your mood, how you feel, where you're at,
Exactly, it's hot and cold.
Has perspective changed?
Yeah, it has overall.
Yeah, life perspective.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I mean, some of it is in a good way. Some of it is in a bad way. I mean, in a good way, it's like, look, you just got to count your blessings. Don't be too sort of, don't attach too much hope on things, you know. Don't count your chickens before they hatch. Mm-hmm. Like, that's literally this.
Absolutely.
He hadn't hatched yet, you know. As well as, you know, some dark kind of ways as well. Like, it sounds kind of morbid, but it's like, look, I'm not afraid to like die, bro. Like I've got, I got a baby. I got my. I'll see my son. You know what I mean? That's what I believe.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll see my son on the other side, so it's all good.
But can I stop you there? Because I find you astonishingly positive for someone who's less than a year into baby loss, and you even just said, "I'm going to tell you the dark thing," but the dark thing was laced with the positive outcome at the end. When what happens, you know, you become aware of your mortality, but when that happens, boom, there's Aiden.
Yeah, exactly. Like he's faced death before his daddy, so we can catch up on the other side.
Do you mind if I ask you about your relationships with friends and especially with the guys, the boys, your day ones?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How that all is and the reaction and how maybe you appear to them in terms of, do I say anything to Mark? Do I approach him?
No. The mates I've got, my close ones, they've been ace, man. Like everybody's, you know, shown their sort of support and, you know, condolence and everything and encouragement too. It's like they encourage me, like they know we'll be back, they know we'll have more kids. You know, mine and Selena's relationship, like I said, we've been together since 2013. My friends have been really supportive. I mean, I've got friends that have kids, I've got friends that don't have kids, and they're both, you know, they're just good people. And, you know, they're telling me about, you know, maybe an aunt of theirs who went through that.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they say, my mum had a miscarriage before me or whatever. Like just sharing experiences and stuff, which I think is extremely important. And that's another thing which helped us get through it so much. Yeah. Like we had some family members sort of like just telling us about their experiences with it. Like Selena's got like, I think, aunts who've had like several miscarriages or stillbirths. And we didn't know that.
Yeah.
But
all of a sudden you find out these things with your friends
and
you didn't know.
And that is so helpful in getting people through it because it's like, you go from feeling like, okay, I'm isolated going through this terrible thing that's happened to me or to me and my partner to, okay, I'm in a group now of people who went through a really unfortunate, painful experience and got through it. Like you said, like, look, you've gone on to have more kids or another kid. And that is extremely powerful and encouraging to see that, you know, that wasn't the end of the line for you. So it doesn't have to be the end of the line for me.
Nope.
And so I feel like that's the main thing that made me want to come on this podcast because, the sharing of experiences, knowing that there's other people that felt the way you felt and some people's experience with it was what I would think would be worse than mine. Like, imagine we take an Aiden home.
Yeah, okay.
Imagine he was in the cot and, you know, Elijah was getting excited, his new baby brother, and then we lost him. Yeah, like, yeah, you know, you got like cot death and whatnot, and then, you know, Elijah's talking about, oh, where's baby gone? Where's baby gone? That'll kill me.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
What would we tell him? He'd remember. Yeah, yeah. He'd remember the baby.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's extremely bad, but in a way, it could have been worse.
Okay.
So you got to look at it like that, you know? It could have been worse. Sort
and
of.
You're managing it the way you need to manage it as well.
Yeah, survival.
You know, absolutely.
You're amazing.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, I think it's been I would say it's been one of our most powerful discussions we've had.
Yeah.
I think. On here, I think it's been a really powerful one. I really do.
I mean, that's why I decided to come down here in the flesh, because
the mental toughness in that. Yeah,
the subject matter requires it, man. Mm. Like, it's no small stuff. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. And look, as parents, as people who have decided to bring life into this world, to get pregnant, it's a possibility.
Mm.
God forbid, but any of us could go through this again. And anyone we know as well. So we've got to be aware of it. We've got to face it. And we've got to know how to deal with it and things. Like, I've got friends who are expecting right now. And, you know, by God's grace, everything goes amazingly for them. And the child's born healthy and everything. Like, I wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy.
How are they around you? Just out of curiosity. Because it's like that elephant in the room discussion again, isn't it?
Yeah,
because they did feel like, oh, we can't show it because they're still grieving, or we don't want to put it in people's faces. It's that whole nuance, isn't it,
sure,
attached?
Sure, sure. Funny you say that, because maybe it's me who's probably not as, like, maybe I'm kind of avoiding them a bit.
Oh, okay.
Completely perhaps. Normal, though.
Yeah.
Completely
normal. Because it's like I said, I wouldn't wish this on anybody, and I'm extremely happy. I guess I don't ever see myself as like a jealous person, but no, I'm sorry, like, this is jealousy. Like, you know, when my friends, you know, do have their sons and things, of course I'm going to be wishing I had mine.
Absolutely.
Of course I'm going to be looking at it thinking, although yes, I've got mine and I'm extremely grateful for that, but it's just like, yeah, you know, or I've got a friend who's got two boys. I've got a cousin who's got two boys, and I should have two boys. I do have two boys, but one's not here. And it's just like, yeah, of course there's jealousy. And that's admitted jealousy, man, because there's nothing more. I don't get jealous of somebody's car or somebody's this or that or rubbish. I'm sorry. A son is the most valuable thing you can ever own. Like I said, I could talk about this forever. Like I said to my wife, you guys are probably going to be telling me to, like, shut up, because I could go on about this forever. I mean, there's even so much more I haven't said. It's like, even like the phone calls.
Yeah.
Like, I had to make all the phone calls to everybody and tell them what happened.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, that's another thing as well.
Oh,
it's like,
gosh, yeah.
It's like you're reopening the wound. It's like you're reopening the wound again with each person you tell, because you're experiencing their reaction to
it. Absolutely.
And the one that cuts me up the most is the first person I called, which was my mom. First person I called was her dad. And my mom, I think she was like on the way back, walking home from like doing some shopping. She was just carrying some grocery bags from Co-op or whatever it was. Oof.
Yeah.
Just the sadness in her voice and her cry. I'm glad I didn't do that in person. I'm glad we were like 200 miles away. Because, yeah, that was real hard, man. She was looking forward to her third grandchild, her third grandson. And just to know that,
I felt my mom was horrendous.
Yeah, horrendous. Yeah. It's horrible, man.
It was... One of the worst phone call I've ever... Yeah,
I'd say so. Probably worst phone call I've ever had. But yeah, and then all those subsequent conversations, you know, all the other family members and friends and whatnot, and everyone's just baffled. They're just, you know, shattered. Like, just like, why? And it's like, you've got to do this all over again. But it's like, look, I'd rather do it than have Selena do it.
Yeah.
You know?
You said this before. It's like the opposite end of telling someone when you've been on holiday. You tell them the first person you say, you tell them all the detail. By the sixth person, you're saying, yeah, it was good, it was sunny, that's fine.
Yeah, right. It's true, isn't it?
Because there's nothing else to say, is there? Like,
first thing I want to do when I get back off holiday is take a week off.
Yeah.
So I don't have to tell anyone. Yeah.
How was your holiday? Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
Fine. Yeah. But and with this one, it's a completely the opposite end, isn't it? And it's retelling, but you're the one having to retell it.
Yeah, and you've not even processed it yourself.
Right.
And then even the sadness. It's like just hearing the sadness in everyone's voice when you break the news. That's heartbreaking all over again. It's like several of those conversations brought me to tears again. It's like while I'm trying to patch myself up and build myself up, it's breaking me down again, time and time again. So yeah, man, it really had an effect, man. The whole thing is just, yeah.
How is Selena now? If you don't mind me asking.
Yeah, she's good now, man. She's good. She's tough, man. She's tough. She doesn't know how tough she is. She doesn't know how tough she is. I often have to spend a lot of time reminding her sometimes, telling her her life story, telling her the stuff she's been through. Listen, yeah, she's tough, man. She's been through some stuff, and I think the world of her, and yeah, she's
you
just.
You can tell.
Yeah, man. She's a soldier. She doesn't know it.
How would she describe you?
I don't know. I guess she's kept me around this long. So I think that's a good sign. You know, yeah, saying stuff like the show must go on and a man's just got to really be strong and tough and stuff. I know it's a bit contradictory because, like, look, there's a stigma. There's always been a stigma attached to men, like, showing emotion or talking about their problems and stuff. It's
absolutely.
Like, you know, just, like, this. It's not me saying just man up and get on with it. It's not that. It's be honest with yourself. Look in the mirror. Admit that you're hurting. But at the same time, you've got to acknowledge your role in this. Your woman has gone through this physically. You've not gone through this physically. Her body's not going to be the same. She's going to have the muscle memory of the whole thing as well. You're not. You're just going to have, obviously, the emotional and mental and everything like that. She's having that plus the muscle memory of it, you know. Thankfully, there's been no lasting problems with Selena. She's fine, fully recovered physically and whatnot, as much as you can.
Yeah.
But you got to be strong for your woman. And like I said, there's always been a stigma attached to men's being emotional and talking about things.
And there still is to a degree.
There is. That's why I really wanted to come in here. So it's like, you can be mentally strong and tough and show that real manly, traditional, macho grit. And come on here and talk, you know, emotional stuff. Yeah. Like I'm sorry, if anybody thinks that's like, you know, being soft or what, like, I'm sorry.
Well, there you go. That goes back to the old male stigma thing, isn't it? The fact that in your head you go, oh, hang on, I don't want someone to think I'm being soft or anything. And it's something I think even stigmas have changed in the, 3 years since we first started doing this. Mm. And you mentioned a phrase that we've talked about on this show, man up. Mm-hmm. Which we're not particular fans of, but also it's a generational thing. Mm-hmm. We on our mental health episode for International Father's Mental Health Day not so long back, Matt had a great conversation about growing up in that environment where a lot of the attitudes at the time were his family and his telling them to man up, but it was a lot of piss taking. But he has good memories of that time. It changes. Mm-hmm. It's always a transient process, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's only going to continue to evolve.
Mm.
But even from just 10 years ago, we're in a much better place to be able to. And fuck them. If someone doesn't like you opening up, then don't matter. Go away. I don't care.
Yeah,
it's not going to stop me.
There's definitely walls that have been broken down with regards to men's mental health.
Yeah.
Which is great. And like, yeah, men really need to be there for each other.
Yeah.
Brotherhood and friendships and fathers, especially. But yeah, man, like it's important.
Well, from what I've seen on this episode, people such as yourself have got a massive role to play in getting that out there. If that's something you would like to pursue at some point, because the way just your presence and the way that your vernacular and the way you put things. Mm. Like I said, you're more than welcome to join us whenever. It doesn't have to be a whole episode. We'd love to get you back on. But anytime, even if it's on another one, you can just drop in any time you like. Thank you so much.
I just want to echo that and just say thank you. I think you've been brutally honest, and I like the fact that you've been brutally honest, because you've dispelled some myths, shall we say, and I think you've done them in the right way, and
you made Aidan proud.
Yeah,
well, both you boys,
thank you very much. This is the Still Parents podcast. We will be back very soon. In the meantime, if you'd like to find us, as we mentioned, our social, Still Parents Podcast, our website, stillparentspodcast.co.uk. I know you're busy, you've got more important things to do in your life, but if you do have 30, 40 seconds to drop us a review on any of the platforms that you use to listen to this podcast, it really does help us and get the message out there for other people who need to have voices in the room, whether you want to talk, whether you want to listen, just to have some comfort, hopefully, which can be provided by knowing that this is not something that you are going through alone, and there's people who know exactly where you're at and what you're going through. So on that note, thank you very much. This is the Still Parents podcast, brought to you with Globals. Make some noise. Ryan, see you in a bit.
Bye bye.
Cheers, Matt.
See you later, mate. Thank you.
Mark, you're an absolute superstar. It's been a pleasure to meet you, and we hope to see you again.
It's been a pleasure. Thank
you, guys.
I'm sure
we will. Thank you. Absolutely.
All the best. Take care.